All right, 9:09 now on this Tuesday morning. Here we go. New Orleans Pelicans basketball. Your New Orleans Pelicans tipping off the regular season tomorrow against the Chicago Bulls in the Smoothie King Center. You can catch Pels Bulls pregame 6:30. Tip-off 7 o'clock tomorrow on WWL AM, FM, and WWL.com, and streaming on the Odyssey app. We're delighted to have Pelicans basketball, and we're delighted to be joined now by Jake Madison, host of Locked On Pelicans. How you doing, Jake?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Thanks for taking the time. Let's start with the Trey Murphy extension. How important was it to get one done before the season, and how important is he to the Pels?
I think this was something they had to get done, and I think the deal, 4 years, $112 million, is a win-win for both sides. Trey Murphy gets, you know, generational money here. New Orleans locks him in on a four-year deal, and this is a guy that they consider a future starter. Yes, he's injured right now, will miss the opener tomorrow night, but this is someone who I think will be starting by the middle of this season. And when you look at the core guys on this team, it's built around Zion Williamson. Zion Williamson's best net rating, so basically the most effective lineup he has, includes Trey Murphy in it. When you pair him in one other player and look at the stats, the stats say Trey Murphy is the most important guy to put alongside Zion Williamson with that deep three-point shooting that he has, spacing the court for a guy that attacks the rim like Zion Williamson. This was a really good deal. They get him in at under $30 million per year, and that might seem like a little bit of sticker shock, but in the age of a rising salary cap where there's more money in the NBA than there ever has been before, this is something like 16% of the salary cap. That's going to be a steal for a starter in the future, and I think in a couple of years we'll look at this, and it'll be one of the better contracts in the league.
What do we know about his hamstring?
It sounds like it's healing pretty well. Hamstrings can be tricky. He's not going to be available on opening night. I imagine he'll get reevaluated this week. We'll see him maybe return to play in a week to 2 weeks, I think, so he won't miss too much time to start the year.
From what I know of hamstrings, having been through them and talking to so many orthopedists throughout the years and doctors, it seems as though it's, you know, the NBA season, I don't have to tell you, is a long one, but it seems like hamstrings can be problematic if you go before you're ready. So I guess the Pelicans are going to play it on the safe side, I would think.
Yeah, you know, they dealt with this 2 years ago with Zion Williamson, where on New Year's Eve he suffered a hamstring injury and it basically ruled him out for the rest of the year. There's not a whole lot you can do other than just rest and let your body heal itself when it comes to these. This wasn't as serious of a hamstring injury, it sounds like, as others are, but you definitely do not want to rush back from this type of injury early. I think it's also better to miss games earlier in the season than late in the season, too. This is a team that has enough talent here. They should be in playoff contention. The last thing you want is a situation like last year where Zion Williamson suffered another hamstring injury, missed that first-round series where they got swept against the Oklahoma City Thunder. You want Trey Murphy ready for the stretch run with that three-point shooting, with that court spacing, and I think the Pelicans tend to play injuries kind of cautious, and we'll probably see the same approach with Trey here.
If I know that, if you know that, certainly the Pelicans know that, right?
You would hope, but given some of the injury history they've had in the past, you never know, but they have gotten better on that front, particularly the past year or so. So I'm hopeful that we won't see any sort of setback or anything like that. Trey's been doing some shooting work on the court. Once he's cleared to play, they've got to ramp him back up with some light conditioning, slowly getting a little bit more before they put him back into a full game. So I think they'll take the cautious approach. They'll handle this injury correctly. This is now a core piece of their roster going forward. Him, Herb Jones, Zion Williamson, DeJounte Murray, who they traded for this offseason. They're not going to do anything that would jeopardize his season or his career.
I hate, and look, no injury is good, but man, I hate to even hear about a hamstring. Speaking of core, the Pelicans got a pretty solid core locked up for a few years.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, they addressed one of the two biggest needs they had this offseason, and that was a point guard and a center. The center still remains a big question mark for this team, but I think they feel by trading for DeJounte Murray, moving him back to his natural position of point guard, he's going to add a lot to this team. One of the issues that they had at the end of last season was struggling to win close games. Late in the fourth quarter, a close game, they did not do a good job. In fact, they were 0-22 when trailing after three quarters. DeJounte Murray, and coming over from the Atlanta Hawks, is a guy that's won crunch games before, those close games where he's hit big-time shots. They think just that ability alone is going to really elevate this team going forward. He's not even 30 years old yet. This is a guy that could average 10 assists per game this season. They think pairing him with Zion Williamson is just going to unlock this offense a little bit more. That was where they struggled last year. But he also fits in defensively. He leads the league in the past, I think, 3 years in steals per game, alongside Herb Jones, who made the all-defensive team last year. They should form a pretty formidable defense that's going to lock down some backcourt players, and I think they're very optimistic about their chances this year.
How about preseason? What did we see?
We didn't see a whole lot. It's preseason. You don't want to put, you know, too much emphasis on that, but you know, we did not see what we presume is going to be the starting lineup out there. Brandon Ingram only played in the final game. Zion played in the first two. They had one canceled that was supposed to be played in Florida due to Hurricane Milton. So preseason was a mixed bag. There's definitely some cause for concern. Rebounding looked like it could be an issue. This team is a little bit small if they don't start a traditional center, and I don't know if they really will on opening night. So there's still, I think, more questions than answers around this team. There's a lot of talent, but the question is, how does it all fit? Can you make it work? And that's going to be the big challenge for head coach Willie Green this season, to be able to put those pieces out there on the court in a way that makes sense. So I think we're going to get the first true test tomorrow night against the Chicago Bulls, and I'm excited to see what we're going to find out there on the court.
I'm getting a text here from some people, a couple of different texts, asking about small ball. They don't understand what small ball is in basketball. Break that down, and that's what the Pelicans would be doing this year without a real starting center?
Yeah, you know, they still might go with a traditional lineup, which is your point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, and then your biggest man in the center position. And they have some players that can do that. But whoever, if they were to start a traditional center, you're going to probably be rolling out the worst starting center in the league out of all 30 teams. And I think the Pelicans just want to put their best five guys out there on the court, and that means a small ball lineup, so a non-traditional lineup without a starting center. This was popularized by the Golden State Warriors during their, you know, their dynasty run where they won all of those titles. They took Draymond Green, who's only 6'7", 6'8", and had him as their center, and it allowed them just to play fast. Usually those 7-foot centers, those big men, are a little bit slower, and as the NBA has kind of trended towards a more PC league, fast pace, moving the ball quicker, you need guys that are a little bit more mobile. 7-foot centers aren't always that. Some are, but the Pelicans don't have one of those guys. So if you're playing with a small ball lineup, you're sacrificing size for speed, essentially. It can work. You need to really focus on defensive rebounding, which can be an issue, so the team needs to collectively try and do it. But you hope that even if that is an area that you struggle in, on the offensive end, if a team is starting one of those slower centers, they're not going to be able to keep up with the rest of the roster. And so the Pelicans hope they'll be able to blitz opponents on the offensive end with that small ball lineup. And with Zion Williamson, with a defensive ace in Herb Jones, a shooter in C.J. McCollum, Trey Murphy when he's healthy, Brandon Ingram as your go-to scorer, there's a lot of talent there that should still be able to be effective, even if you're going kind of, you know, against the traditional grain, I guess, with that kind of big starting center out there.
Let's talk about Zion and his conditioning and expectations this season and everything else.
He looks incredible. You know, one of the things we've been waiting for with him is for him to kind of find the maturity you need to succeed at the NBA level, to essentially just be a professional athlete, take care of your body, put in the work in the off season, come into the season in shape. And he hasn't done that yet. And when you look at last season, his year didn't really start until about January. Yes, he was playing before that, but he wasn't in game shape. He was kind of still working his way into being the best version of himself, and it took that 40-point loss to the Los Angeles Lakers in the in-season tournament, an embarrassing game for the Pelicans, for that really to be a wake-up call for him, where he started doing two-a-days to get that conditioning down. This offseason, from seeing him, from talking to him, from talking to people around him, he's been doing it all himself. And it seems like that light bulb has just gone off for him. Better late than never, even though we would have liked this earlier in his career. But just from looking at him, he looks like he's in the best shape of his career. He's realized that maybe some of the weight issues or the lack of conditioning has probably added to some of or caused some of the injuries that he's had in the past, held him back from being the best version of himself out there on the court. And he's doing all of the right things. For whatever reason, the light bulb has gone on. Something has clicked, and he's being the best version of himself. And I'm excited that his season is going to start on Wednesday. in October and not in January. This is a guy that, you know, if the Pelicans do well, can be in the MVP conversation, can make one of the three All-NBA teams, proving he's a top 15 guy in the league, something he hasn't been able to do just yet. And if that maturity is there, if he keeps himself healthy all season long, and he played his healthiest year last year in 70 games, this is a guy that's going to be a force in the league and going to be a nightmare for opponents every single night.
You know, we all see it in our kids or our kids' friends where their faces change from being a young adult to a full-grown man or woman. I've seen the same thing in Zion, and I think maybe that might have a little bit to do with the light bulb where you get your money, you're in the NBA, then all of a sudden you realize, hey, this is about my career and my legacy, right?
Yeah, and I think that's something that he's focused on. This is a guy who genuinely loves basketball. He wants to go down as one of the greatest players ever. But you can't do that when you're missing games. You can't do that when you're not competing as hard as you can night in, night out. And look, when they come into the league, a lot of these guys are 18. I was an idiot at 18. I didn't know what I was doing, and it takes a little while for it to kick in. Don't forget, he also had a child during the season last year. That probably creates some maturity for him, too, and he's kind of maybe just grown into himself. LeBron James, you know, who's playing into his 40s here, wasn't doing everything that he needed to do that year one, two, or three in the league. It even took him a little bit longer to kind of figure it out. Tom Brady's a good example of that, too. He was able to really elongate his career by the way he took care of his body, but he figured that out a little bit later. And Zion has finally figured it out. Better late than never, I say, when it comes to that sort of thing. And that should have him primed for a really big year.
Did Zion have a boy or a girl? I'm just curious.
I can't remember what it was. And he's pretty private about that sort of thing. So we don't really try and pry when it comes to it. But you've seen that they have a child and they start to mature really quickly.
Tim tells me it was a girl. Tim tells me it was a girl. I was wondering about some kind of, you know, Zion and, well, I hate to say little Zion because Lord knows he wouldn't be little, but, you know, some kind of Zion and his son playing, but there's still time for that. Real quick, Brandon Ingram, how do you see that playing out?
You know, right now he's going to be on the roster on opening night. That Trey Murphy extension, I don't want to say it means he's for sure going to be gone, but it definitely puts the Pelicans in a numbers issue, a numbers crunch when it comes to the salary cap next season. They're still trying to figure that out. I think it's definitely more likely than not that he won't be on the team next season, but I could see him being on the team all year long this year.
Real quick, reasonable expectation, Jake Madison. You know, optimism is high at this time of year, tipping off against the Bulls tomorrow night in Smoothie King Center. What are your reasonable expectations for the Pels this season?
You know, I think if you're looking kind of for like a realistic best-case scenario, we're not going to say they're going to go 82-0. They're not going to win the title. Mm-hmm. I don't even necessarily see them making conference finals of being a final team in the NBA. There's enough talent here, even if at times the fit is questionable, that I see them being a playoff seed. They should try and at least aim for that sixth seed, get out of the play-in tournament, safely be in the postseason. There's enough talent here, even in a brutal Western Conference, to be able to do that. I think that's the realistic goal for the team this year.
All right, let me zoom ahead to summer. What would you look back and consider a successful season?
You know, I think making some noise in the playoffs. You don't have to win a first-round series, but you need to just get Zion Williamson in there, and he needs to play. They've made the playoffs two times since he's been on the roster, and he has not played in the postseason once. You've got to get him that experience, put him on the biggest stage. We saw a brief glimpse of it, that play-in tournament game against the Los Angeles Lakers in the Smoothie King Center. They were down 18 points, and he led that kind of a one-man comeback. He was putting up 40 points. He was leading them to the win. The Lakers were on the ropes. And then he suffered a hamstring injury and couldn't finish out the game, and the Lakers won. He was going to lead the team to a win in that. I'm pretty convinced of that. We need to see that Zion Williamson in the playoffs. If you do that, even if you lose that first-round series, that provides so much optimism and something that you feel is a core building block for this franchise. You've got to get Zion Williamson in the playoffs this year.
Advancing would be nice, though. Thank you, Jake Madison, host of Locked On Pelicans. They tip it off tomorrow night against Chicago Bulls Smoothie King Center. Pels versus Bulls, game time, pregame 6:30, tip-off 7 o'clock, WWL AM FM, WWL.com, and streaming on a live Odyssey app. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL. It is 9:28. We care about mental health here in the morning, and we always try to address that every couple of weeks. And we join our friend Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, author of numerous books. You've seen her on television, I'm sure, at one point or the other. How you doing, Dr. Judy?
Hey, Tommy. Good. How are you?
I will be so happy when the election is over. I'm just, you know, man.
You burn out, election burnout.
Are you?
It's a lot, huh?
Yeah,
yes, I am. I am. You know, I'm going to vote by mail. I've already filled out my ballot. I'm going to take it to the mailbox today because that's just like one thing off my mind, you know?
Yep.
And
same with me. I'm
I
an early.
Definitely hear you.
Early vote. I'm early vote to get it over with.
Early vote.
So who are you voting
early
for?
Early vote.
Who
exactly.
Are you voting for? I'm just kidding. No, I'm just teasing. But first of all, since I did start that way, let's begin there as we talk about family relations and friendships and election season and everything. Who somebody votes for is absolutely none of your business.
Right.
Accurate.
Right. Yet everybody thinks that it should be your business.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so hard. I was excited when I saw that we were going to talk about this topic today, only because it is so relevant, because it's literally these conversations are happening everywhere. You know, I need to learn how to turn off the notifications on my phone where in the morning I get just like all these pop-ups about the election. It's like a lot, you know, and seeing all the discontent, everybody's fighting. And I think it's because it just feels so personal, you know, just your ideological beliefs. It's like when you don't agree with somebody, it's like they think that you're attacking them, you know. But it doesn't have to get that personal, and yet it does because it aligns so much with people's values. It's like a really important part of who people are, and they identify themselves with it.
Talk about, if you will, Dr. Judy, maintaining the peace in a relationship between significant others, husband, wife, husband, wife, whatever, and respecting each other's right to disagree politically and not having to disclose to them. You know, you don't want secrets between couples, but there are some things that people are allowed to keep to themselves, right?
Exactly. And I think that's part of the issue when we are with close family members, friends, is part of the way that these conversations go is that even if you don't want to admit it to yourself, generally there's at least one person who's trying to get you to come to their side. You know, they want you to agree with them. And it's like, if they don't accomplish that, then they feel like they failed somehow and like this wasn't a good conversation. But I think we need to take a step back. And if we're going to have these conversations, even with people who we're in close relationship with, instead of trying to convince them to change their minds, which honestly, they're just not going to, right? 99% of the time, they've thought about their beliefs long and hard, and that's why they're their beliefs. But it's more about seeking to understand, because I think the human mind is always trying to categorize. It's always like a us versus them type of a thing, right? And sometimes it can go okay. And other times, you know, it can really sow discontent. It can make you feel really bad about yourself. And so I think that instead of attacking the other side and making assumptions about why they might have the beliefs that they do, if you have a conversation with an attitude of curiosity and you're just like, well, okay, tell me a little bit more about why you think that way or why you support this candidate, but you're not trying to find holes in their argument. You're just trying to understand them. I think that actually improves relationships because they may support the candidate for reasons that you don't even know. And maybe there's something that you're not seeing. And then you don't have to assume, oh, well, this person is just stupid. How could they think this? You know, this is what happens sometimes when we have these conversations, that we make a lot of assumptions that aren't true.
What I think is so sad about this is that friendships get destroyed, families break up, relationships get destroyed, when, in my opinion, Dr. Judy, they're all full of crap. The politicians is what I'm saying. They're all full of crap. And then you got personal relationships that suffer as a result of this. What is it about a campaign or is it about people wanting to be able to predict the future? Is it about them thinking an egocentric thinking that they think that they know what's better for everybody? What's happening within ourselves as people that get all fired up about their candidate one way or the other? Is it really about patriotism or is it something more personal in that?
way more personal, and you made a lot of good points. You know, people just want to win, right? People love winning. I mean, I would sure love to win the Niners on doing so well, but hey, you know, yeah, that's just how it is.
You're preaching to the choir on that one, sister.
I was thinking about you guys. Yeah, but you know, I mean, listen, all human beings, they want to win. That's like a thing that we have a competitive spirit for the most part. And then on top of that, you know, it's not so much about the politicians. I mean, what do we know about them? Like you said, you know, there's a little bit of a smoke screen for all of them, right? There's a public persona that they're presenting that you're buying into. It's not really about the politician. It really is much more personal than that. For people, it's sort of like, look, if you don't agree with me, that means you don't love me. If you don't agree with this, it means that we have nothing to talk about, because there's no way we think the same on these things that I really value. If you keep holding to your side and saying, I'm not going to change my mind, you know, people then make it about them. Oh, well, what is it about me that you won't change your mind for me, right? Everybody personalizes this. And the politicians are really just the stand-ins for whatever underlying resentment you might have towards a person, whatever conflict you may have already had in a relationship. It kind of just brings it all to the forefront, right? But then you get to use this politician as an excuse for why you're fighting, when maybe there's more underlying things, either from your own past or from your relationship with this person, that actually needs to be addressed.
So on the surface, it might be about Donald Trump v. Kamala Harris, but really, when you get right down to it, there's a lot more going on. Accurate?
Way more. Exactly. Very accurate.
Somebody texted in and said, there's no way a relationship works with two different ideologies. Let me take a break. We can pick it up from there. We come back, Dr. Judy. How can a liberal and a conservative get along? I think I would rather be with somebody that disagrees with me respectfully and has a different point of view, because they might be able to teach me something or enlighten me, as opposed to, you know, the dreaded echo chamber that we all talk about, but instead of it be like in a house. I couldn't do that. 9:36, 24 till 10, traffic now, WWL. Hey, 9:41, 19 till 10, please, for the love of God, don't break up a relationship. Don't break up a friendship. Don't break up anything because of this election. I hate to say nonsense, Dr. Judy. The future of the country is not nonsense. The government is not nonsense. But to think, and it goes to, you know, we always have the political conversations about people get so spun up about president. But if your garbage doesn't get picked up, call the White House and see what they can do for you. It's your city council person. And people tend to ignore what means the most to them, right? Like if you drop a pebble in a pond, the circle that's closest to them. So conversely, when it comes to knowing what's important and what's not, Don't get so revved up that you destroy something that you wish you had after the election's over. With that being said, let's talk about different ideologies coexisting, getting along, and being able to discuss things, or I hate to say fighting fairly because it makes it contentious, but being able to discuss things rationally and as grown-ups.
Right, yeah. You know, I really thought what you said right before the break was so important. We do tend to get into an echo chamber, you know, and I definitely do not want yes people around me all the time. You know, it can be hard sometimes to hear a different opinion. You would love it for everyone to agree with you, because guess what? That's validating for you. It kind of builds your own self-esteem, like, haha, I'm right. But you know what? This is how people never grow. You know, if you just have the same people around you saying, yes, everything's great, everything's wonderful. But is it, though? Is it really wonderful? So I will say that, you know, my husband and I, especially over the last few years, I feel like we've definitely diverged a bit more in our political beliefs. So I don't think we're voting for the same candidate. I actually haven't asked him who he's voting for. And I'm okay with that. You know, we've had our conversations. We've agreed to disagree. Sometimes it's gotten definitely a bit fiery. And once I decided, you know what, like, I'm going to try to take my own advice. And I'm going to try to talk to him and try to understand where he's coming from and why he has the belief that he does. I still don't agree with him, but I do think that I understand him more and I have more compassion for his point of view. You know, we're not breaking up our relationship over this election. So I do think it's interesting because at first I definitely had that same viewpoint of, oh man, you know, that's too bad that we don't have these same ideas. But actually, when I listened to understand, I actually realized that our values are very similar. It's just the way that we perceive the candidates representing those values, you know, and he's entitled to his own opinion.
And I'm not trying to pry into your relationship, but could there have been something besides the actual election that was underneath all of this?
I mean, I definitely think that my husband and I are both type A individuals.
Yeah.
So we tend to get, I think, in general, you know, we both have very strong points of view. So we definitely have more dissent maybe than other couples do. But I think that probably is the carry through, right? Because we're kind of used to being strong headed and like arguing with one another over certain things. I mean, it can even happen over, you know, how we want to clean up a room. So I think in terms of what's behind it, I think that was probably the starting place. It's like, oh, we're just used to getting into a debate because both of us think we know what's right and what's the best.
You know, as you said,
I had to accept that.
As you said, cleaning up a room, everybody thinks they know the right way to do it, right? And Dr. Judy, look, I might still be married if I realized years ago that I didn't always know the right way to do something or this or that or the other thing. Maybe not. I don't know. But you do learn as you get older. Why does it take so much time for people to realize that they're not always right? They don't always know everything. A peek behind the curtain. When Jordan Fiegel was going to become the producer for me, one of the things I told him was, now, you know, you got to be able to tell me when I'm full of blank, right? Because I want we all need to be told that, don't we?
Yeah, we need somebody who's willing to say that to us, right? And sometimes it can, you know, make a relationship a little bit harder for that day or for that moment. But in the end, it sounds like Jordan's like, hey, but I have an opinion and I think that this might make this conversation better or this segment better. And you value those opinions.
If you can't, if you don't want somebody around you and you're not strong enough and can appreciate somebody to tell you, because we are all full of crap at some point, to tell us when we are, then you're really missing out on it. Go ahead, Dr. Judy, it's your thing. Talk about it.
You definitely, no. I mean, I appreciate your opinion on this because I think it's absolutely true. And that's one of the reasons why I respect you so much, Tommy, because you're not afraid to get constructive criticism. Listen, it can be a little hard to swallow at first, but usually constructive criticism makes me better. And so I welcome it, even if my ego is slightly bruised sometimes when getting it. If you can just take a step back and be like, well, what's the big picture here? And that's what I want people to think about in terms of this election. You know, what is the big picture? Is this relationship valuable to you? I mean, if it's not, then who cares, right? And then you're just arguing for argument's sake. But if the relationship is of value to you, then just take a step back and be like, is there a bigger picture here? And what am I trying to preserve? And if they've hurt your feelings, then be honest about that and have honest communication. But you can also say, you know what, it's getting too heated. So maybe we should just take a step back from these conversations, or we can still talk about it, but let's put some ground rules in place. You know, how do we talk to each other? How do we talk to each other? What is the tone? How long do we want to talk about it? And then maybe after a big political discussion, you just want to do something lighthearted and fun with one another, you know, just to reset the relationship. But if the relationship is of value, then take that big step back and say, what am I really fighting for?
And is the larger issue here about fighting fairly? And what are some of the rules, some of the guidelines, I guess, for couples or even friends to remember if you're going to have a discussion, if you're going to, and again, I said fight. I hate to use that word because it's contentious. But if you're going to have a discussion, what are the rules going in? What should the ground rules be?
Well, I think that if you're going to have this conversation, what you need to tell each other is, look, you know, let's try to remember what we love about each other. Let's each say one thing that we appreciate about each other before we even get into this conversation. And then the ground rules is no personal attacks, no name calling, right? No, calling the other person stupid for having the belief that they have. And let's try to approach this with an attitude of curiosity. Let's just try to understand one another. Let's, after, you know, a little bit of a time where you've said something, let me try to paraphrase what I think I heard so that I can be accurate in understanding you. Because oftentimes those misconceptions occur in your perception of what was said. So it's important to take a break, you know, every like minute or so and say, okay, let me make sure I heard you right. You're saying you support this candidate because of A, B, and C. Is that right? And then they can say, yeah, that's right. Or they can say, no, not really. You missed this other point that I said. And then that really helps you to clear up the communication before you get resentful, before you start holding grudges. And I do think that it's helpful to try to put a time limit on it. You don't have to argue about this for 2 hours. Like, oh, let's just have a 30-minute conversation. And when that 30 minutes is up, let's go grab coffee. Let's go do something. Let's go walk around the park. Let's do something to relax and to try to remember why we like each other so much.
You know, it as we talk about this, I always tell people when they're looking for career advice, it's you got to have a target, because it's hard enough to hit a target if you're aiming at it. If you don't know what you're aiming at, God bless you trying to hit a target. So from the goal orientation standpoint, or being goal oriented, should you go into the discussion ahead of time thinking, well, okay, let's see, what am I really trying to accomplish here? Because if I'm trying to change their mind, I'm not going to do it. Or am I trying to learn more about what they're going to tell me? And if I'm not open to that, why are we even having the discussion?
Exactly. You know, I think sometimes we get into these conversations and we think that, like you said, the goal is to change people's minds. And guess what? You're not. And so if you can just let go of that expectation, everybody will be happier. And also you don't feel like a failure somehow coming out of that conversation thinking, oh man, I never get this accomplished. What's wrong with me? You beat yourself up for it. It's like, look, let's reset what the goal of the conversation is, right? Instead of one person winning, one person losing, or one person finally converting to being a Democrat or being a Republican, what if the goal was just to learn? Like, let me see if I can learn something new. And I will say that I was very resistant at first to, you know, some of what my husband was saying in terms of what his views were. But when I took a step back and I really tried to say, well, what is something that I can maybe learn? I have learned something from his perspective. You know, do I 100% agree with it? No. But do I feel like I understand him better? Yes. And that has improved our relationship.
Somebody texted in and said, you can say you think their opinion is stupid, but don't say they are stupid. I don't think that's accurate at all, because I think whenever you throw stupid in there, then automatically you're kind of insulting somebody. Is there a difference between that, or at least what the person's going to hear?
Yeah, I know what they're trying to say. There's something that we say in psychology of like, hey, look, comment on the behavior, not the person, right? Like, instead of saying something like, hey, you're lazy, you know, say something like, hey, I really have a hard time with you not putting away the dishes every night. You know, like actually comment on the behavior. I think that's what they're kind of going for. But, you know, throwing a word in of stupid, that's already a form of name calling. I remember that we used to do this. You know, my mom will say to my sister and I, like, oh, like, well, don't tell each other that you're, you know, don't tell each other that you're stupid, or no name calling. It's like, okay, fine. Like, Judy's not stupid. Judy's just acting stupid. It's like, okay, well, that's still the same thing.
Pretty much on the same territory.
Yeah, it's kind of the same. Right, exactly.
What about raising voices? It seems to me whenever the voices start to go up, then you're losing emotional control. It's becoming emotional, and that no good can come from that. Has anybody ever won anything by raising their voice or accomplished anything, really?
Well, maybe some people think they do, but you really don't, you know. And when people start raising their voice at me, I just get actually, like, opposite, really, really calm, because I can see that they're so dysregulated. So my way of trying to regulate that is just to become even more quiet. So you're really not going to get through to me that way. I mean, I'm just basically like, okay, well, let me just try to disengage, you know. So you don't want to raise your voice. It's not going to get your point across more. And then people are just going to react to what they perceive as that fieriness, right? So I think that that should be a ground rule. You know, I personally really hate it when people start raising their voices in a conversation. So I'll say, okay, well, that's too much. Like, we need to take a break. And you should have a ground rule like that if you're like me. You know, like, hey, you just raise your voice. Let's just take a 5-minute reset and try to come back to this. You know, let's just check our tone, because tone is so important. Tone can really either help or hinder a conversation.
Real quick, before we let you go, to the bigger issue of, you know, the right way to clean a room or the wrong way to clean a room, because after the election is over, the rooms are still going to be there. How do you go about, as a couple, negotiating and realizing that, you know, you're not always right about everything, even though we know my way is the best way?
I know. It takes a little bit of a humbleness to admit that. And I think that you have to just understand we all have egos. It's okay. We all do want to be right. Just admit that to yourself. Mm-hmm. That's all right. But it's just impossible for one person to be right all the time. Nobody is right all the time. So again, just release yourself of those expectations. It's okay to be wrong sometimes because all of us are wrong sometimes.
That person that's next to you, that's going to matter more in the election. I guarantee you that. So take care of it. Thank you, Dr. Judy.
Exactly. Thank you, Tom.
Have a good day. Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. Newell's in studio today, so we're going to see if he sees his shadow and what that means as far as the rest of the fall when we come back here on WWL.